Welcome. I have a feeling there's a lot of people who got up this morning with every intention of coming to our Christmas Eve service, saw the weather, and went back to bed. But you guys didn't. You braved the weather. And hey, it's so good to be here celebrating Christmas with you. If I don't know you, my name is Adam. I'm part of the teaching team here, and honored to be celebrating Christmas and the Advent with you guys. Over the last couple months, I think that I've communicated my family's mild obsession with Christmas. We might have a problem. My tree has been up for 2 months. My house has been transformed into a winter wonderland. It's spectacular. We have seen Elf multiple times this last month, and there's something about him. He gets me. I identify with him. We just kindred spirits, I guess. And I love all things Christmas. I love the celebration. I love all the food and it just the whole package. But there's this one part about Christmas that I just kind of struggle with, and it's the gift exchanging. It's a lot of pressure. You got to get it right. You don't want to give a gift card to a friend that you should have given something a little more thoughtful. I wish we could just do gift cards all the way around. There's a lot of pressure. You don't want to get the wrong gift in the wrong situation, and it's kind of this relational landmine. And maybe it's just me, but yeah, there's all this pressure. And sometimes you can get a gift that communicates you don't really know that person well. I remember a Christmas growing up where my sister, God bless her, she had worked hard, she had saved her money, and got me this really nice, expensive magic set. And that sounds really cool, but at the time, I was 16. And I opened it, and I was like, oh, I love it. It's awesome. Or sometimes we can get a gift, and it's kind of unequal if we're exchanging gifts with someone. Early in my marriage, experienced this. We were exchanging gifts and weren't really on the same page of what my wife and I were going to be buying each other, and no dollar figure or anything. And she got me this amazing iPod. It was the U2 signature iPod with a colored screen, like 64 gigs of memory. It was an amazing gift. It had just come out. And unfortunately, I opened my gift first because I got her a $20 toaster from Walmart. I didn't win that Christmas. I didn't win the gift game that Christmas. It was really bad. It was not level. And sometimes you can just get the wrong gift. Terrible gifts are out there. One Christmas a few years ago, my parents decided to buy my daughters a puppy. It was a surprise to all of us. They came walking around the corner with a dog that I had to take home and keep alive. And it wasn't the gift that kept giving. It was slowly taking my life from me. That's a terrible gift. But every once in a while, you get it just right. You find that special, perfect gift for someone. And it's great. And what makes it great, what makes it perfect, isn't that it costs a bunch of money, or that it was really hard to find and everyone's trying to find this thing, but you found it. It's that it's personal, that it reflects and communicates something about a relationship, that I know you. I mean, I might buy you something that you don't even think you need or know that you need, but I know you and I care about you, and that's what makes a gift great. Well, over the next day or day and a half, many of us are going to be in homes with friends and family, and we're going to be gathered around dinner tables and Christmas trees, and we're going to be celebrating the perfect gift sent from heaven to us. The Advent, the arrival of Jesus in the flesh coming to us. And so today, my hope for us is that we understand that the Advent of Jesus is more than just celebrating a single moment. It's more than just celebrating this event that happened that's so important. It literally split time, and it's this amazing moment. But the Advent of Jesus and why we celebrate is a continual recognition of his presence and life available and offered to us. The Advent of Jesus is bigger than just a moment. It's him coming into our world and being present in our lives. Over the weeks leading up to today's Christmas Eve gathering, we've been in this series called I Am. And we've been looking at these seven relatively simple statements that Jesus makes about himself that help us know and understand him more fully. You'll see behind me these really cool icons that represent each one of these I Am statements. And today, as we are bringing this series to a close, the I Am statement that we'll be exploring today fits perfectly with the advent of Jesus, of who he came to be. And these I am statements are helping us better understand this gift from heaven in the form of a baby in a manger. One of the themes that I've noticed throughout these weeks of these teaching through the I am statements that he's made is that Jesus is constantly giving us access to himself. He's helping us know him more fully and more completely. He's helping us actually have more faith and trust in him and experience hope. And in this final Advent, or this final I Am series today that we'll step into is, again, found in the book of John. The book of John was written by someone who was actually in the flesh with Jesus. They were there. He heard the words that Jesus said. He saw the miracles. He saw what Jesus did and wrote these things down. And he captures these seven I Am statements that Jesus has made about himself. And the one that we're going to step into today, the setting, the context for it is actually a little bit of confusion. See, Jesus has done all these amazing things. He's raised people from the dead. He's healed people. He spoke and taught with such authority that it just baffles people. And so there's this crowd, and they're trying to figure out what to do with Jesus. They're trying to figure out who he is. And there's some in the crowd that are saying, this is the Christ. This man is sent from heaven. Look at his authority. Look at his words. We need to follow him. And there's some in the crowd that said, well, I think he's a prophet. I think that he definitely is influenced by heaven and speaks from heaven, but I don't think that he's the Christ. And then there were some present who really just wanted him to go away, who thought he was bad, who thought he was causing this division. And as we step into Advent today, that context that was present as Jesus delivered this I Am statement is actually still present today. The people look in the manger, and they don't know. Some people say, yes, he's the Son of God, and we should follow him. Some people say, he was a really good man. And others just kind of wish the whole thing would go away. And this is the context in which Jesus delivers this I Am statement. And in this simple statement, he does two things. One, he makes clear who he is. He makes clear and obvious and simple who he is. And secondly, he says what it means. He shows what it means to follow him, for us to be his followers. So if you have a Bible, you can turn there with me to John chapter 8 as we read this statement. It's going to be on the screens behind me as well. It begins in verse 12. When Jesus spoke again to the people, he said, in the midst of all this chaos and confusion, people trying to understand him, these are his words. I am the light of the world. I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. This is the message of Jesus. This seventh and final I Am statement, Jesus says, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me, who listens to me, who believes in me, whoever walks with me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. These two themes, light and dark, are present all throughout Scripture. They're these two influences. They're always kind of juxtaposed to each other. One representing something that's from heaven, light coming from heaven, bringing life, bringing hope, bringing promise, bringing vision. And on the other side, death, lost, dark, pain. These two things that are opposed, and it would have been understood to these people that light is something that comes from heaven and it brings life. That light is something that brings hope, that brings vision. A psalmist in Psalms 18 captures it really well, and he says this, you, Lord, keep my lamp burning. The psalmist understands where his life is coming from, where this light is coming from. My God turns my darkness into light. This reality, this thing that they would have known, that light, this light that brings life, is something that's coming from heaven. Now, we can assume that as Jesus is teaching these words and is bringing this statement to these people as they're having this conversation, it would have been happening outside and in the daylight. And so it's understood that he's not talking about daylight when he says, I am the light of the world. He's not talking about the sun that rises and sets and enables us to see and have light. He's talking about a light from heaven that penetrates to the deepest places of who we are. A light to our heart and to our soul. The birth of Jesus is the moment that the light of heaven came into the earth to bring life to mankind. This is what we celebrate. These are the songs that we're singing on Christmas and Advent, that the light, the living light, came to us to walk with us, to be with us, and to bring us hope and life and vision. Jesus says, whoever follows me will never walk in darkness. Have you ever done much walking around in darkness? It's kind of a perilous thing. You certainly have a stub toe, maybe smash your nose up against something. A lot of us are staying in hotels and visiting family and can wake up in the middle of the night and not know where we are and run into things. It's kind of a perilous thing. Like, it's not a good idea to walk in darkness. I remember as a child playing flashlight tag. Anyone ever play flashlight tag? It's amazing that we survived these kind of games. We would go outside in the pitch black of night and try to find each other with flashlights as we run around in the dark. And I'm in my friend's backyard, and I've spent a lot of time in this backyard. I'm familiar with it. And I feel pretty confident about running where I can't see. And what I didn't know is that earlier that week, they had put in a dog run, which is a really long steel cable that goes across the yard. So I take off in a full sprint running in the dark, and it's right about this height, catches me right in the neck, flips me upside down. You can't run in the dark. It's not advisable. And yet, it's this phrase that Jesus used, walking in darkness. It so well captures the feeling of navigating this life without the light of Jesus. That's what he says it's like. And people in this world, it's as though they're in a room and it's dark and they're trying to navigate. They're trying to figure things out, but there's no light. There's no vision. There's no life. This is what he compares it to, this condition of the darkened heart without the light of Jesus. I had this really cool opportunity a few years back to take a trip. And I was with some friends, and we were staying on an island, a really kind of remote island off the coast of Central America. And there was kind of a cluster of islands. And it was quiet. It was peaceful. It was such a beautiful time. And we had decided one day we wanted to explore some of the other islands, but we didn't have a boat. They're several miles apart. And so we found a local fisherman, and for a few bucks, he was willing to take us around and chauffeur us. And it was such an incredible day. We saw whales that came up to our boat, and we saw beautiful scenery on some of these different islands. And it was just such a wonderful time. And we were at the last island getting ready to head home, which was about 4 miles away. And the sun is setting. It's just beautiful. We're getting in the boat, and there's no gas. The boat. And when I say boat, a fisher boat, I mean an oversized canoe with a motor hanging over the edge. And it's out of gas, and there's no gas station here. And so our guide is going from house to house, so people who have generators trying to siphon gas from people, finally gets enough gas and puts it in the motor, and we're getting ready to go. But by this time, it's dark. It's like pitch black. And there's a little warning light that goes off in my mind saying, I don't think you should go on this boat into this. There's no navigation system here. There's not even lights on this boat. But we did anyways, and we're going, and he's wanting to get home. I can tell he's anxious, the fisherman, and he's got the motor up as fast as it will go, and we can't see anything, and it was the craziest sensation to be going as fast as we could with zero vision. And so many people, that's the condition of their heart. They're living, they're waking up day after day after day, existing in the dark. Walking in darkness. And this beautiful invitation of Jesus. He says, if you walk with me, you'll never walk in darkness. If you walk with me, the true light of the world, you will never walk in darkness. He's come to bring life. He's come to bring light. You'll never walk with darkness, and you will have the light of life. He is the living light of our world. He is the light that brings hope and life within our souls. Remember, most of you remember last year, the snowpocalypse of 2016. I remember it. I got stuck for 7 hours in it. I don't think I'll ever forget it. It was so much snow. I remember at my house just looking out thinking, this snow is going to be here forever. There's just feet of it. And then in my neighborhood, the snow plows had pushed snow into these massive piles, and it just lasted and lasted and lasted. It was cold winter. The trees had shed all their leaves. The plants had died, and it was just bleak. But then, as it does, the sun came out, and spring came. The sun brings warm and vitality. And eventually all that snow was melted. I had my doubts, but it got the job done. All the snow is melted. The trees begin to bud again. The flowers come back. And this light, it brings life. Jesus is the light of the world that brings life to the coldness of our souls, to this heart that is hard and broken and walking in darkness. Jesus is the light. Jesus is the light of the world. He is unending and unfading light. There's this prayer that Paul prays. Paul's a leader in the New Testament church, and he writes some of the New Testament, and his books in the New Testament were actually letters written to young churches. And he writes this letter to a church in Ephesus, and he actually writes his prayer for them, this thing that he's believing and desiring for them. And he prays, I pray that the eyes of your heart would be enlightened or be open to the hope to which you are called. That the eyes of your heart would be open to this light that brings life, that brings hope, that brings vision. Church, this is what we're celebrating today. The light of the world coming to us in the form of a baby. Isaiah 9 speaks about Jesus hundreds of years before the first Christmas, before he was here. And it says this, the people walking in darkness have seen a great light. People navigating themselves, figuring out, trying to live, trying to exist, they've seen this great light of those living in the land of deep darkness. A light has dawned. Today we celebrate the advent of the living light. I'm going to light this candle, and we're going to continue to sing songs, and we're going to continue to worship. The advent of Jesus is the dawning of the true light of the world, giving life to everyone who believes in the name of Jesus.